Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I'm Lauren Sherman, the writer behind Puck's Fashion and Beauty Memo line sheet. And I'd like to welcome you to my new show, Fashion People. On every episode of Fashion People, I'll be talking to insiders about the stuff we're all whispering between the press releases. From M&A rumors to celebrity stylist dish to the future of legacy media. Be sure to follow and listen to Fashion People, a presentation of Odyssey in partnership with Puck, available on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Unhappy Hour, the show where we bitch about all the things we love to hate every single week. I'm your host, Matt Bellassai. I'm here in my closet recording far, far away from my producer, Barry Finkel. Hi, Barry.
Hi, Matt. How's quarantine treating you this week?
Well, I do feel like now is an appropriate time to celebrate the small victories. And this will be of no interest probably to anybody else. But I remember saying right when quarantine started, basically, my sink stopped working. The water would only come out of the fucking hose part.
Right.
So it's like an April Fool's prank where you like put a rubber band on the hose. And every time you turn it on, it sprays you. That my hose was like permanently stuck. And my gay solution was to duct tape it to the regular faucet, pointing downwards.
I see nothing wrong with the solution.
Very Bob the Builder of me. And then this week, a month into quarantine, it started working randomly.
Wow.
So I literally have reached the stage of quarantine where the water coming out of the right hole in my sink is like the greatest thing that's happened to me this year. So I'm doing great. How are you?
Oh, you know, my hair's been falling out. So I'd say we're both just like the best we've ever been.
Jesus Christ.
To be fair, I do think it's because of my birth control and not because of quarantine, because it's been happening for months, but it's just more noticeable now. But no one else will know because we can't leave the apartment.
I mean, to be fair, my hair has been falling out for like 10 years now, so...
I hope that by the end of quarantine, I look exactly like you.
Anyway, are we ready for today's episode?
I am so ready.
Good, because coming up today, obviously, we're going to kick things off with Worst Things First, where I shout about the most ridiculous worst news of the week. And then we're going to dive deep into laundry, because no one's around to witness my filth. Or my smell, or my stench, but apparently I'm still supposed to do laundry, like, all the time? Oh, fuck you! Unless your name is Debbie, you're not my mom, so you can't tell me what to do. And speaking of Debbie, we've got one-third of three busy Debras on the pod. We got comedian, writer, actress Mitra Johari as our guest complainer. Mitra's written for TV shows like High Maintenance, Miracle Workers, and Big Mouth. And you can see her new show, Three Busy Debras, on Adult Swim right now after you listen to this episode. So let's get into it. Let's do it. Let's smell our shirts to see if they need to be washed or not and start the show. All right, worst things first. Let's talk about the worst news of the week. And on theme, the first news may have to do with wearing shirts or pants, because a judge in Florida,
only in Florida,
is literally begging attorneys who show up for court hearings via Zoom to get out of bed and put on clothes. Because apparently... attorneys have been showing up to court hearings on video, not wearing clothes or not getting out of bed.
I love this. It honestly makes me want to go to law school.
Just imagine that you found out you're like a divorce attorney. Listen, let's call up Leon. and make sure that he's wearing a full outfit every time he gets on Zoom. But yeah, imagine finding out your like divorce attorney showed up in front of a judge shirtless and had to atone. Yeah, so a Broward Circuit Judge Dennis Bailey wrote this letter. It was published by the Weston Bar Association. Basically, the judge says, these are hearings. They're not casual phone conversations. It is remarkable how many attorneys appear inappropriately on camera. We've seen many lawyers in casual shirts and blouses with no concern for ill grooming in bedrooms with the master bed in the background, etc. One male lawyer appeared shirtless, and one female attorney appeared still in bed, still under the covers. And putting on a beach cover-up won't cover up your poolside in a bathing suit. So please, if you don't mind, let's treat court hearings as court hearings, whether Zooming or not.
Okay, I don't think this is totally fair, because judges get to just wear robes to court every time.
That's true.
Like, come on.
Sir, Mr. Dennis Bailey, Your Honor, your dick is out under there. Don't act like you are so special.
Do judges wear clothes under their robes? They must, right?
That's how I felt wearing a robe to graduation. I was like, why the fuck do I have to wear a shirt and tie under this? I'm in a goddamn robe. I should be in my underwear, at least. Or at most. Next, the opposite thing happened in Brazil when a leading Brazilian judge turned up on a live stream court hearing and he was shirtless, just fully no shirt on, sipping a drink. The judge, a 57-year-old guy, called onto a video call with some other judges who were all working from home, and he appeared bare-chested on camera as it went live. And I guess there was like some complaints filed, but he got up like almost immediately, walked out of frame, put on a shirt and came back on. It seems pretty clear he like didn't realize that it was going to capture him yet.
We've all been there.
There was a Zoom video of like a 20-person conference call. And it was like, I guess it went viral on Twitter, where a girl didn't realize that she was on camera and like set the phone or set her computer on her bathroom floor.
No, no, no.
In full view of her like sitting on the toilet.
No, 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 no.
And it's just like you see the dawn of realization come across everybody's face individually. And I think she only realizes it when one person was like, oh, Katie. I also assume, even when video chat is not scheduled or happening, I assume that my camera is always watching. So I just will never have any phone or computer camera pointed in a compromising space unless I want it there.
Oh.
I feel like that's just generally a good rule.
It's a solid tip.
Pro tip, never take your dick out in front of a camera unless you want it out in front of a camera. And finally, a press regulator in the UK ruled that a woman who claimed to be in a long-term relationship with a 92-year-old German chandelier has been told her attraction to historic light fittings is not considered to be protected sexual orientation. Did you get all that?
Oh, my God. Break it down for me, baby.
Okay, so here's what happened. This woman from Leeds in the UK, she's in her mid-30s. Her name is Amanda Liberty. I heard on another podcast where I heard this story that her name is Amanda Liberty because she previously claimed to be in a relationship with the Statue of Liberty.
Okay, fantastic. Love this orientation.
But anyway, she complained about an article in The Sun, which is a British publication, that mocked her public declaration of love for Lumiere, her name for an intricate lamp that she bought on eBay. She claimed to be objectum sexual, an individual who is attracted to objects. So, Amanda Liberty is in a long-term loving relationship with a German chandelier named Lumiere and is complaining that this publication is mocking her relationship and her orientation. And then there are regulators in the UK who kind of determine whether or not, like, I don't think it's like an actual legal court. I think it's just like the people who are chosen to regulate, like, the press.
I don't know how England works.
I don't know. They have a lot of weird media laws. But basically, they were like, we totally respect the fact that you are in a loving relationship with a lamp, but it's not a protected orientation. You are fully welcome to be in a relationship with this lamp. And they like laid out all of these like very technical reasons. They were like, you know, your relationship might be real, but it's still not legal for you to marry a lamp, so we can't recognize. This is why marriage rights are important, because they're like, you can't marry your lamp, therefore we have every right to mock it. Also, they were like, you have been very open in the media about your relationship with this lamp, so like, you opened the door. It wasn't like you were trying to keep it private.
Do you feel like Anchorman was like a really important movie for her growing up?
I love lamp.
I love lamp. She loved lamp.
Yeah.
Also, I feel like quarantine is like absolutely a time where, what is it? Hold on.
Objectum sexuals.
It's absolutely a time where objectum sexual folks to just be thriving. I feel like it's creating a lot of tension probably in her relationship. Like,
yeah.
Is she starting to like have an affair with a spoon?
Beauty and the Beast is any testament. There are a number of inanimate objects that I would happily fuck and be in a married relationship or in loving relationships with. And yeah, I, at this point, we've all been in isolation long enough where lamps are looking real good right now. Okay. I'm not saying I've done anything, but I see there's a lamp looking at me right now and he's giving me the eye. I'll keep it together for the rest of this recording, but who's to say what happens when he's warmed up and the mic is off. On that note, that's it for this week's Worst Things First. Next, we're diving deep into our dirty hampers. Deep dive, deep dive, deep dive, deep dive, deep dive.
Deep dive.
Deep dive.
Deep dive. Deep dive. Deep
dive. We're well past the 1 month mark for time that most of us have spent indoors. And I have never felt like more than like a straight up rodent right now in my life. That video of the groundhog eating pizza, have you seen it?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's video of a groundhog eating pizza while staring blankly into the eyes of two dogs looking at it from the other side of a window. That has never felt more viscerally me. Because when I'm not chomping on carbs and staring dumbly into the abyss, I'm just going through the loops of household chores. Spending this much time inside really makes me realize, damn, we really do just gotta do the same shit over and over again, every single day, forever. Like a fucking groundhog. And besides doing dishes and dusting and cleaning, the one chore that I hate the most is laundry. Because it literally never ends. The global economy can come to a crashing halt, but somehow I still have a pile full of dirty panties at the end of the week. So that's what we're bitching about today. This is why laundry is the worst. And yes, I do realize people used to like fucking bring a giant cheese grater and a bucket to the river, and that's how they wash their shit. And I have a washer and dryer literally in the next room. Whatever. My complaints still matter. First, what in the fresh fuck is laundry soap even made out of? Why, and why is that demon snuggle bear always trying to squirt it all over me? I don't need some haunted stuffed animal trying to blow his laundry lotion all over my clothes. I just hate the like fluorescent tampon commercial blue liquid that all like laundry detergents emulate.
Yeah, that's not right. Also, I feel like all of those just like give me hives, which is confusing.
Also, it's weird that they have them where they're like, this is laundry scented. What does that even mean? It's like a snake eating itself. Where did the scent come from in the first place? It's truly upsetting. I also don't like that every CVS and like Walgreens or Duane Reade in the vicinity of my apartment has locked up all of the laundry soap behind a key in like a little window. I guess because people steal them a bunch.
Yep.
I just hate having to ask an employee like, hey, can you unlock the cage and give me the teddy bear lotion? And I did that once, and the guy like went on this full monologue about like, yeah, we had to lock these up because I was on the train the other day and I saw this guy and he was selling all of our bottles of laundry detergent for $5 because people steal them and then resell them on the train. And I was like, great.
It's called capitalism.
Yeah. Also, I will be buying them from the train now.
Way more convenient on your commute.
But yeah, it's just like so much effort just to buy laundry soap in a jug form.
We want to hear something that's going to upset you.
Okay.
I use powdered laundry detergent now.
What?
I knew you were going to hate what? That.
I have never even heard of that.
It's because we go to a store where you can do like bulk buying. And So you can do bulk buying of that. But the issue with that is then when you put it in the machine, it like clouds up. And then sometimes you accidentally breathe it in. And that cannot be good for me.
Yeah, I just anything in powder form that I bring into my apartment, I'm like, I'm definitely inhaling this like protein powder or whatever. It can't be good. Next. Also, why does every item of clothing come with such detailed instruction manuals and tag form that I have to fucking read like I'm supposed to treat each item like its own precious?
Also, all of those directions have little symbols on it that I'm just supposed to understand. What language is that in? We don't use hieroglyphics anymore.
Yeah, there's like Egyptian pictographs on every fucking tag of pants. Yeah. There's no part of my 27 years of schooling ever taught me what the tags meant on pants. That was what I should have learned first thing, elementary school. They ABCs come second. First, teach me what the fuck a like square box with a dark circle in it and an X through it means. Which brings me really to my next point, which is why the fuck are there so many washing machine settings? It's hot, cold, warm, delicates, pots and pans. It's like, what the fuck am I supposed to, how am I supposed to know what the difference between all of these are? Or whether I'm even supposed to use hot or cold water on things. I choose it at random. There is no rhyme or reason to whenever I hit hot or cold.
What is permanent press?
I have no idea what permanent press is. All I need to know is what setting will get marinara sauce out of Calvin Klein underwear. Next! I also hate that it takes 30 minutes for clothes to wash, but like 90 minutes for them to dry. So if I start a second load while the first one is in the dryer, then the first one finishes and I just gotta leave it in there like a pile of hot clothes soup and it gets all gross and smelly and mildewy.
Back when I was living in my ground floor apartment, we would put up a drying rack, but there's no sunlight in that apartment, so things just would never dry. But now we have sunlight and we put the drying rack right in front of the window and the sun was shining through and things dried up pretty nicely. This is after they all went in the dryer, by the way.
Because the dryer didn't work well enough?
Yeah, absolutely. We go to a laundromat. They never work.
My dryer works, but it's just frustrating to like have to wait so long for them to dry. They should dry quicker. Also, folding. It's like, oh, now it's not enough that you're clean. Now I got to arrange you in the most organized fashion so you fit into drawers better. First of all, bold of you to assume you're not just going to stay in a laundry basket forever so I can fish around while I'm getting ready in just a pile to find matching socks. The amount of time that I spend like fishing around in a pile that I absolutely refuse to fold just for a pair of matching socks, the amount of time that I spend doing that, I could absolutely fold like 7 loads of laundry. But I refuse. Out of principle, I refuse to fold.
I have gotten into serious, serious arguments with both my boyfriend and a couple of friends. My mom is very much on my side because obviously she taught me this, but I have so many friends who don't fold their underwear. But I fold them. I don't understand why you wouldn't. For me, it's mostly just like, like when I go into my underwear drawer, like sometimes that kind of underwear isn't necessarily going to work with the pants that I'm wearing. And it's so much easier to see everything if they're all nicely folded.
Yeah, I can imagine that being a like not folding your underwear being a thing if all you have is like very lightweight, like lacy underwear that you can just like throw into a drawer and rifle through. But I like, yeah, I have various degrees of underwear that I like to kind of go through and see.
And I did try it this time. I did laundry this week and I was like, you know what? I'm just going to see what all the ruckus is about. And I tried it out and my underwear doesn't all fit in the drawer if I don't fold it. So it's just a waste of space. So everyone who's been telling me otherwise, aka Alex and my friend Gabrielle, you guys can go fuck yourselves, okay? Take your underwear in your drawers. You drown in them.
Battle lines have been drawn.
I love you both so much.
Next, moving on from clothes, washing sheets is like an entire day's worth of labor. I know I'm a man, and my opinion on this is negligible, but I do firmly believe that washing sheets is more difficult than giving birth.
Fair. Totally fair. Factual statement.
I feel like it's factual. Just taking the sheets off of the bed is a full body workout. And then you have to wash them and dry them and then wrangle them back onto the fucking bed. Also, in the dryer, this happens to me so much, they all get tangled up and then they don't dry evenly. So, like, all of the sheets will somehow get caught up in one fucking pillowcase and then they're all just like a sopping wet mess, even though they've been in there for like 2 hours.
There's also something really disheartening about seeing a naked mattress.
Yeah, I do not like that at all. Especially when like one like section of it is a different color because of where you sleep.
Why is it like that?
Next, how often do you wash? Do you like use a bath towel more than once?
Yes. What? Yes, I use a bath towel more than once. Oh my God, the waste.
I mean, so do I. Let me be clear. Growing up, we didn't. We had like so many towels in our house. And everybody would use like one bath towel a day. And then, yeah, my mom at the end of the week would be like, why is there so many towels? And it's like, well, because four of us fucking wash every day. And then I went to college and I was like, okay, I need one bath towel per semester. We'll do one thing. And now I have a happy medium, which is I have many towels that I go through, but I try to use each bath towel a few times before I put it in the laundry.
Yeah. I definitely go by like a smell test.
Okay. Sure, sure. Next, what the fuck is pre-rinsing? There are all these steps that I know like colonial people did and passed down. And by that, I mean like my mom. I don't know what rituals I'm supposed to do on my clothes before I put them in the wash, but I definitely don't do anything except put them in the fucking wash and pour soap in to the cup. And then close it and turn it on.
Yeah, I don't understand any of the pre-rinsing.
Yeah, there's pre-rinsing. I know if there's like a stain on something, you're supposed to like spot treat the stain before you put it in. But I don't know what any of that means. It's just like throw it all into the bucket and hope for the best.
Yeah, and like when you spill on yourself, you take the piece of clothing off and then you lick whatever remnants of stain it is. And then you put it in the wash.
Yeah, just lick it off and that's it.
It is upsetting. Alex, the other day when we did laundry, he was like, hey, I don't know if you should be washing all your sweatshirts this frequently. And I was like, oh, no. I haven't washed my sweatshirts in a long time. I just washed all of them this round. And then he was like, I mean, I know that you spill on them a lot. And I was like, okay, fuck you. And then that night I put on my white sweatshirt and then we ate a little bit of just regular old chocolate. And then I looked down at my sleeve and there was chocolate everywhere, all over, like more than I ate. And I don't understand how I do it.
Yeah, chocolate is like the silent killer because you drop one speck of it and it looks like a fucking murder scene. It's kind of alarming.
It is. But I have just decided, like, am I going to try and prevent that stain from spreading or like scrub it out? Absolutely not. That is now simply my disgusting sweatshirt that I will continue to wear until it doesn't even look white anymore.
Absolutely. I fully support you.
Thank you.
Which really brings me to my final point, and that is, how many times can you wear a thing before you actually have to wash it? I think people are playing kind of fast and loose with this rule in quarantine, especially with underwear. You get one day's 24 hours worth of wear out of underwear. After that, you have crossed into disgusting territory. Just because you're sitting in the same place for 24 hours doesn't mean that your fucking grundle is not emitting juices into your underwear. That is the initial trap of your body in capturing the juices that come out of you. You need to take off your fucking underwear and put it into the laundry and then put on a new fresh pair every single day. I don't fucking care what else is happening in the world. You're disgusting. Even though, yes, it is fucked up that we have to keep doing laundry all the fucking time. It never ends. It is ceaseless. This is the loop of life, and I hate it, and I don't want to wash my underwear that often, but we have to, and that's why I have like 300 pairs of underwear, because for a long time, I would just not wash them. I would just keep buying new pairs of underwear, and oh, that is allowed. Anyway, on that note, I'm just sick of doing laundry. I think the best solution in quarantine is to just wear as little as possible, because what you're wearing still needs to be washed, but not if you don't wear it. Life hack. And that's why I have decided that I'm just gonna have to throw my couch away at the end of all this. Because I'm like, my couch has fully seen too much during this whole mess. And I'm just going to have to throw it away. So anyway, on that note, that is it for this week's Deep Dive. We've got Mitra Johari on the pod right after this commercial break.
I'm Bobby Finger.
And I'm Lindsay Weber.
And I want to tell you about a podcast I think you're going to love.
Who Weekly is a podcast about everything you need to know about the celebrities you don't.
Does celebrity news stress you out?
Are there too many people you've literally never heard of?
Check out Who Weekly, a podcast hosted by Lindsay Weber and me, Bobby Finger.
Each episode goes deep into the biggest Who celebrity stories of the moment, and if you're still confused, we even have a weekly call-in episode where we'll answer the most burning listener queries.
Who Weekly airs twice weekly with brand new episodes on Tuesdays and Fridays. Listen and follow Who Weekly on the Odyssey app or wherever else you get your podcasts.
Well, my guest complainer today is comedian, writer, actor, Mitra Johari. Mitra's written for High Maintenance, Big Mouth, Miracle Workers, and The President Show, and now she's starring in Three Busy Debras on Adult Swim. Welcome, Mitra.
Thank you.
Via quarantine, via Zoom,
yes.
We're making it work. I do want to know, I absolutely love your microphone, like karaoke. The grip is perfect.
Thank you.
You're very much in the mode.
I host a podcast with Joel Kim Booster, and we each got sent mics because neither of us own them. I mean, he got like a very official looking mic that has like the shield around it and stuff. And I got the karaoke mic, which I really, which I actually think is perfect. And they gave me what I needed to get through the experience of doing it from home.
Yeah, yeah. I feel like it is about the spirit of it. And
yeah.
There's few things that I think capture quarantine better than like being trapped in a karaoke video. It makes no sense. We're cycling through like absurd scenes. And eventually we might make it out or not. We'll see.
Or not. We'll see.
Well, before we talk about all the things, we like to start by saying, what is one thing you hate that everybody else loves?
Okay, so this is topical, but also not. But what I really have been hating in this time is relaxation culture.
No relaxing ever.
Well, it's like, I feel like I keep seeing things that are like, go, like, use your face mask, take that bath, like, you've earned it. Like, it's time to chill. And like, the culture of relaxation, particularly during quarantine, is unfathomable to me. And, like, everything to me has an undercurrent, no matter what. Like, no matter what I do, even outside of quarantine, everything that I do has this undercurrent of, like, right, but, like, I should be working because one day I will die. And I've never felt that more than in quarantine. And taking a bath feels useless.
So you're saying you've not accepted the earning of relaxation yet, and that you feel compelled to be productive?
I not even really productive, but it's just like, I think it's more the idea that someone could achieve peace in this time is unrelatable. Like when I see people with their like beautiful setups and like the gorgeous baths they're taking, like that seems exhausting to me too. Like I'm full blown like mug of wine in the shower right now, which is the closest I can get. But like, it seems exhausting to make a beautiful dinner too. Like that doesn't seem chill to me either.
Yeah. I mean, so you live in LA, right?
I do.
I'm just anybody with more than like one room and like more than one window. I'm like, you are royalty right now.
Yeah.
How long have you lived in LA?
I've been in LA for a little over a year now.
Okay. Yeah, because you moved out there for Three Busy Debras, is that right?
I originally moved out here to start writing for Big Mouth. I'd been going back and forth between New York and LA a lot, and eventually was just spending more time of the year working in LA than I was living in New York not working. So It just made sense. I wasn't like super psyched to move to LA, but it just felt like the thing to kind of do. But It's been fine. The nice thing is like right when I felt like I was starting to really get my groove of living in LA, COVID came. So I guess the moral of the story for me was like, don't ever get comfortable in anything.
I feel that so hard. There's so many people I know too who are like, I feel like I was like getting like, I was so excited for like this summer and this month. And it was like, nope.
Yeah. I feel like the vibe among like me and my friend group was so like, you know what? January was trash. February, we're getting better. And like, let's go March. And then
March is done. And we're all done.
We're all done.
Yeah, we are done along with 2020. I'm like, you know what? 2020 she's had her moment and we're finished.
She has really had her moment. No year has made a bigger splash than 2020. So congratulations to 2020.
How long did you live in New York?
I was in New York for 4 years. I'd been going back and forth between New York and Ohio, where I'm from. I was like doing internships in college there and then eventually dropped out of school and just went. So I moved to New York beginning of 2015 officially.
Got it. Because I'm also from the Midwest. I'm from outside of Chicago. So it was that Midwestern to New York transition of feeling like you are the like nice, gentle person amidst the like sea of New Yorkers who are the opposite.
Yes. I mean, I think it's been such a virtue to be thought like... It's a virtue and a curse to be thought of at night as nice, because it's a lot of pressure to stay nice when in a culture where not everyone is nice. But I do, it's overall, I'm very happy to be from a place where people are nice to a fault.
Yeah. Tell me about like the origin of Three Busy Debras for people who don't know.
We met shortly after I moved to New York in 2015.
Who are the three of you?
Yes. So I'm Mitra Jahari, and the other two Debras are named Sandy Honig and Alyssa Stonaha. So the three of us met up, and the first night that we met, we did an improv show because we were very heavy in the improv scene at that time. And we improvised a scene where every character was very busy and named Debra. Obviously, it was just an improv show, so we sort of went away from that. A few months later, we're trying to write a short play, and we were trying to write a completely different idea, but we just kept coming back to that silly little thing where like every character was busy and named Debra. So it became a short play, and then it became a longer play, and then it became an hour-long play that ran for several months at the Annoyance Theater in New York, which is now closed. But that led to us writing a pilot, and then we did a show at Carnegie Hall that was a completely different play. Then that got Amy Poehler's attention. So we met with her, developed a new pilot, pitched that pilot, and then a million years later, now it's out on TV.
And the like premise is...
It's three women who are very busy and they're all named Deborah. They're all suburban housewives who all live in the affluent suburb of Lemon Curd. And each episode mm-hmm. is just kind of them doing activities.
Sure.
So one week, you know, they join a club. One week they have a sleepover. It's very silly, dark, fun, cartoony.
Yeah, I love it. And as someone whose mother is named Deborah, along
oh my
with
God.
Everybody else who is basically from the Midwest, it's a very, very common name.
Traumatizing.
But it's like, it's such a mom name.
It is. And it's like, it's very fun. Like, you know, they're such heightened characters, but we do have a lot of people, friends and, you know, people who watch the show just saying like, they have a Deborah in their lives. Obviously, they're not doing the things that these women are doing, but I think there are certainly kernels, at least for us, there are kernels of women that we know that are informing the characters that we're writing. So it like makes sense, but it's very funny to have people be like, yeah, like my mom's like this. It's like, oh God, I'm sorry.
So you write on Big Mouth, mm-hmm. right? Which is a completely kind of a different form of comedy, writing for an animated show.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I mean, Big Mouth is such a ridiculous show about a ridiculous time in people's lives.
Yeah.
I feel like initially it was like very deeply uncomfortable for me to watch Big Mouth because it was like, it's too real. It's too triggering for my my adolescence.
Yeah. I mean, it just like, it goes there in a way that I can definitely understand why it can be off-putting to somebody. But also it's a show that like, if I had had this show when I was 13, it would have normalized so many things for me that I thought made me uniquely disgusting. Like female masturbation and like just like the way that people handle their periods. Like there's just so much reflected about like teenage girls and girls' sexuality that I think I personally did not know anything about when I was in junior high and high school and would have been so grateful to have seen. And I think, you know, as disgusting and stupid and silly as it is, I think there is like, what I do really value about the creators of the show is they take this stuff really seriously. And it's like, what's the most responsible way to do the most disgusting thing possible, which I love.
How much of the show is like the writer's kind of personal experiences? So like, how much are you able to bring like, okay, this super awkward thing happened to me.
A lot.
We should put this in.
It's really cool because it's like there's some stuff that is like so close to me that like I wouldn't want to bring it to like a personal project because it would be so instantly recognizable to the people that I'm talking about. But when it's like a cartoon character saying like a really insane thing that someone said to me or a really horrible thing that I did, it's like, well, that's the character. And I'm merely one of many writers on a show. So who knows? This could have been anyone.
Yeah, that is definitely the advantage of something like fully scripted like that.
Yeah.
Or like a characterized rather than like a stand-up thing where you're like, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I feel
it's you
totally. And it's like, you know, for people who are in my very close circle, they will recognize what's going on, but no one else has to. And I have a really hard time talking. It's why I probably will never be like a successful stand-up is that like I really don't like talking about things about myself that are true that involve other people because I really want to. It's like my decision to go on stage. It's not like my brother's decision to go on stage or my dad. That's just my own personal opinion. I still like love watching stand up and love seeing people talk about their own intimate stuff. It's just like what I struggle with personally and kind of my line right now. So having an outlet like Big Mouth or like High Maintenance or whatever to share true stories through a filter that is somewhat anonymous is really helpful.
Right. No, I mean, that is respectable. I was like, you know what? My family made fun of me. Now they're getting put into a bit.
Well, mine, it's
whether
just
they
like
it or not.
Mine's just like three layers deep of like it's, they're doing cartwheels or whatever. like it's crazy kooky cartoon characters. My trauma. Like if you peel back one layer, it's like all pain, but
right. I guess I didn't. This is another complete transition. But going back, we didn't really talk about like how is your quarantine actually going?
I
feel like I've so normalized the like, okay, we're all in this like complete abnormal world.
Totally. I mean, but even when like the email about like stuff to rant about where it's like my world is so small right now where it's like the big rant is like my life. Like my life everything. Is my problem. Like the world is my problem. So then it's like, but like finding a funny way to talk about that is so hard. But
yeah,
overall it is okay. I mean, I think it's hard for the same reasons it's hard for everyone and that like, I'm not with my family. I wish I was with my family. But I'm very lucky to be working during the week. Like, I think I would be in a much darker place emotionally. I mean, if my relaxation rant didn't tip anybody off, like, I really need to stay busy to stay balanced. So I'm lucky to have that. But it's getting a little easier with time, but it's certainly just like the fatigue of doing nothing all day is so strange. That's the weirdest thing is like waking up and then like 2 minutes later, I'm going to bed.
Right.
Do you feel that? Like,
I feel that so hard. Yeah. I'm like, what is the point of me even making my bed in the morning? It should make me feel better. Like, okay, I'm getting up, I'm starting the day, but I'm peeling back the covers like seconds later.
Yes. Every activity that I do feels like superhuman to do anything. Right. Like it took me half an hour this morning to be like, get up, make a cup of coffee. Like it was like begging myself to get out of bed because I was just like, what's the fucking point? Everything I do is going to be in my room. Why would I get out of bed? I could just stay here all day. Like, and I like, I could, and I will probably.
Right. That is, yeah. My energy levels are so outrageously low that the simplest of tasks is like, I can't.
Like knocks me out completely. I slept like 12 hours last night. I didn't do fucking anything yesterday. I have no idea. Like, but I was so exhausted when I went to bed. I woke up this morning. I was like, I can't believe it's morning already. Like I barely slept. I'd slept for 12 hours. It's like, what's going on? What am I doing?
Yeah. I totally feel the same way. It does feel like there are a lot of funny people who are putting out some funny stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, that is like, it is amazing to me that anybody is capable of like feeling funny in this moment.
Oh my God. Same. I mean, yeah. I've never seen Sex and the City before, so I've been watching it for the first time, which has been awesome. That has been, because it's like, that and like Housewives right now, because I'm like, none of it feels real to me at all. Like none of, like it all feels like a different universe. And, but it's also like, I don't feel bad if I like, I'm texting the whole time or I'm not paying like anything where it like doesn't ask it. Like I'm not watching anything good. I'm not like reading books. I'm not doing anything. I'm not making anything. I just like don't have that in me right now.
Yeah. But I mean, you know what? Watching Sex and the City, that's an accomplishment.
Thank you.
That takes a lot of, you need a lot of emotional fortitude to get through that show. But
to watch something that like requires something of you in this time, it is like so astonishing to me.
That is one of those things. I mean, I find that something that like, I don't really have to use my brain besides just like focusing it on something.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, okay, if anything, it like forces me to watch so that I can't be distracted by like scrolling through Twitter and realizing how shitty everything else is.
Okay, I get that. That makes sense to me.
Barry very much wants to know what character you see yourself most as.
Yes. I really identify with Miranda. I think that's like, that's it for me. Just a career obsessed person who's like trying to date, but like mostly just like driven, and like she always seems to really show up for Carrie, which I like.
Yeah. So we're gonna move into like, we call it a game. It's mostly like, let's just chat about some stuff that you have said that you've hated. One, it was a tweet that you said that said, if a bird ever touched me, I would cry.
Oh my God. I did not know that was going to be actually very excited to talk about this. Did not know we'd be talking about this. I love that.
I want to know, yeah, was there a specific moment that inspired this, or have you had a long-standing disagreement with Brooks?
Sometimes to share something like that is true and is so deranged online, but like never to expect to like discuss it is so funny. And okay, so I am actually just very scared of birds. all birds, they really freak me out. They creep me out. And I've never seen the movie Birds, like, but it is like a very irrational fear. Like I have this recurring fear, like anytime I see a bird flying near me, I'm convinced that it's going to fly directly into my face and its beak will pierce my cheek. Like that's what I see.
Oh my God.
When I see a bird flying near me. So like every time a bird is near me, I will flinch. I will like hide, but it's like, so like, there's been so many times that I'm like out for a walk with my boyfriend and a bird flies and I like squeal and hide behind him. It's so lame. But yeah, I think they're really creepy. I don't like them. I don't want to be touched by one.
I feel like birds are actually a pretty common theme amongst guests on Unhappy Hour. They come up more often than you'd think.
Really?
Because they are. They're like creepy dinosaurs and they're scary.
Wow.
I've had a lot of run-ins.
That's amazing. I feel very like, I didn't know I had a community. And that's really nice.
There is a community, yeah. Okay, a couple of other ones that you sent prior. One is white underwear.
Yeah. So this is like, you know, and this one I believe I have a community on, which is just like, as someone who like ruins every pair of underwear every single time I have a period, the idea of white underwear is so funny and disgusting to me. Like, I just think that like every pair of underwear should be very dark and very absorbent. It's crazy enough that like we would be asked to wear white clothes at all anyway. As a big spiller, it's just not a part of my aesthetic. But for the internal spills we cannot control, we should not have to worry about maintaining the cleanliness of our white underwear.
Right. Yeah. I do. There was a moment during what you just said where I was like, oh right, periods. It was like, oh, she's really ruining her underwear.
I'm truly ruining my underwear.
So I recently had this, let me explain the origin of this question. I had a realization that like, I don't know why I don't just have good underwear. I have good underwear and then I have the like shitty underwear that I'll like put on if I know I'm not going anywhere.
Yeah.
But I'm like, why am I doing this to myself? Why wouldn't I just have all good underwear?
I'm kind of the opposite where I'm like, all of my underwear is pretty utilitarian. Like I have like had the same underwear forever. And then at a certain point it was like, it's so bleak. How many pairs of my underwear have holes? So I like replaced all my underwear and got like the exact same style of underwear. But, but I kept a few horrible pairs because it's just like when I'm on like a real monster of a period, I'm like, well, let's just wear the like crime scene blue, electric right. blue American Apparel briefs that like I'm not going to wear any other time. So I don't have to feel bad about this. It's also just less comfortable. Like I want to wear huge soft underwear every day of my life.
For women, I guess it might be like the like underwear that has culturally been like set aside as this is the nice fancy underwear seems like it would be less comfortable.
Yeah, you really have to like spend money to get a good like a soft mesh or like a soft lace or something, because otherwise it's like just like scratchy and like gets holes in it. Like I just don't have to feel like I have to like maintain my underwear. Like when I'm like pulling right. up after I pee and I like poke a hole in the lace, it's like, ugh, like it's who cares? It should like why right, am I preserving right. my disgusting filthy underwear? Like I should be able to destroy it and not feel bad.
And the other topic that we sort of touched on was people who are surprised when old shows don't hold up.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I feel like every day on Twitter, I see somebody being like, watched an episode of this movie from the 60s, like, this actor is so fucked up for saying, like, whatever. And it's like, right, but, like, did you think that, like, it was gonna, like, hold up all the ideals of, like, that you have now in 2020? Like just the right. shock and awe of that kind of stuff. Like, specifically, I'm feeling it with Sex and the City, where it's, like, articles being like, 30 times when Samantha was not so PC. And it's like, right. But like, we knew this, like we knew this. And like, to like feel anything other than like, oh yeah, that's bad. And then like, just like, hopefully like things will continue to get better. But in the meantime, it's like, you thought, like, right. I'm always just like, how did you think that it was going to be? Like, it's like people being like surprised when a politician has done something bad or has lied. It's like, right. But like, you knew that they were bad.
Yeah. Sex in the City is definitely a big one. Friends, people are constantly surprised by.
Yeah. It's like, oh, the all white cast. Like, you thought you were going to watch that show and like they were going to be like not homophobic or racist on that show at all. Like the all straight, all white cast.
Yeah. I think there are shows that do upset me. Like 30 Rock is one of my favorite shows. And even that is like from not that long ago where I'm like, ooh.
Yeah.
some of these jokes are not really.
Completely. It's like, I'm certainly not like cancel PC culture. I think I'm more just like, I think we've like hit the threshold of articles that can be written about shows that aired 20 minutes ago saying the wrong things. Like,
right.
It's more like maybe a criticism of like think piece culture or something. It's just like, yeah we know. We know.
We
know.
Well, on that note, on underwear and think piece culture.
And of course, birds. Let's not forget birds.
Right. Okay, well, before I send you off with those thoughts, where can people find you and your work?
You can watch Three Busy Debras on Adult Swim every Sunday at midnight, or the first episode is online on adultswim.com for the next little while. And you can follow me on Twitter at Tweetra Johari. So tweet RAJOUHARI. So that's the best place.
Amazing. Well, thank you for taking time out of quarantine. You're very busy quarantine. we'll see you soon.
Great. Thank you.
All right, we're almost there. We're almost at the end of the show. But first, our chasers. Chasers are the good stuff that helps all the bad shit go down easier. Starting with the TV we've been watching this week. Barry, what you been watching?
So I have been watching Mitra Johari's show, Three Busy Debras on Adult Swim, and I love it. It's so bizarre and just otherworldly in some ways. I just am really enjoying it. So that's been really fun. And then I know that I've mentioned it before, but we're now almost at the end of season two of Justified, and I really love this show. There are definitely some problems. It barely passes the Bechdel test, like barely. But Timothy Oliphant, it's just, God, he's so hot. And he's just a good cowboy marshal. And it's just really fun. And the characters are super great. So those are the two things that I'm watching right now.
I do love Timothy Oliphant.
Dude, you should try it out. It's like, it's violent, but not that violent. It's like dramatic, but not that dramatic. Like, I don't know. It's just really nice for right now. It's like, I'm really into all the characters, and it's just like a tall glass of water that just is like, feels cooling and fun. It's fun. It's a fun show to watch. So I'm into it. I'd recommend watching it right now.
Good.
The first season's slow and more procedural, and then it becomes more like overarching storylines throughout the actual seasons.
Nice.
Yeah. What about you?
I have four shows.
Oh my God. Bring it.
Well, I've been watching, I mean, TV is the only thing that exists right now. So I feel like I should say, so I mentioned that I was watching Westworld on the past couple of episodes. I finally caught up, and I only want to say this just because I've mentioned it the past two episodes, but I normally don't like to say like I hate this television show because I don't want to like waste my time like complaining about a show when there are so many other shows to watch. But I watched the first two seasons and they're so good. And this third current season is like unwatchable. I don't know what the fuck is happening. It is so confusing. It's almost an entirely different show just with the same people. Am I going to keep watching it? Yes, because I have no other self-control. But it's just like, what is fucking happening? So if you are as confused as I am by the current season of Westworld, I see you and I feel you. I've also, I don't even know if I mentioned when it started that I've been watching RuPaul's Drag Race. The current season is back. And it's nice to have like a weekly show to kind of look forward to. It's totally on Friday nights, so it's kind of fun to like have a Friday night activity when staying inside is the only option. Even though this season has been especially weird, because the day before the season premiered, there was a story that one of the queens had assaulted or like harassed young men on the internet, like pretending to be a casting director and like getting them to do stuff on camera. It was like crazy. And they had to, at the last minute, after they'd shot and edited everything, like kind of attempt to play down this person who clearly performed very well in the season. It was like so weird. Anyway,
yeah,
RuPaul's Drag Race, it's like the most self-contained universe of a show that you, it's like you have to watch all of it from the beginning to get half of the references that they make by the current season. So it's so, anyway, I love it. The main show that I've really been watching is The Good Wife. I've watched all of it before, but I'm starting from the beginning, and it's, yeah, mostly I'm like, okay, I'm a lawyer now. I know all of the law because I watch everything, everything that Alicia Florek says. Juliana Margulies is truly the best showbiz name. What a delightful name to say.
It's a good one.
But the real chaser of a show, and I cannot believe we did not say this until now, is the series finale of Schitt's Creek.
Oh my gosh, of course.
Schitt's Creek tragically finished its series, yeah. And it had the series finale. And they also had like a making of Schitt's Creek kind of like documentary following them during the last season. That aired right after the series finale. And I like fully sobbed through that entire thing. I feel like the series finale was like, it was nice and like heartwarming. Like watching that documentary that went along with it and like actually thinking about how impactful that show actually is for how kind of small it was to begin with.
Yeah, it really, like I remember seeing Subway ads for it and like not knowing what it was. And then it became just like everyone's favorite thing in the world. Like parents, kids, like everyone.
Right. Yeah. There's one scene in the documentary that I also saw people sharing on Twitter where they read a letter from some like local teachers, I think, just like thanking the cast for setting an example of like a world without homophobia or like discrimination. And it was like such a beautiful letter, but also like seeing them react to this letter in real time, I was like truly undone.
I need to watch it. I haven't watched it yet.
It was so good. Anyway, so those are all of the things that I'm watching. What is your non-TV chaser?
My non-TV chaser, I have three. I'll keep them brief. One is Jo Firestone. I think I've mentioned this, but I don't remember. She has a new podcast called Everyday Decisions, where she just interviews people about the last 24 hours of their life. And it started right before quarantine, but then obviously it became a very different kind of show because it's still about the past 24 hours. But it, you know, people's 24 hours are very different now than they were a month ago. But and it's really fun and sweet and charming and everything that we love about Jo Firestone. But specifically the episode where she interviews her grandparents who are in their 90s, it is the most heartwarming 27, 29 minutes that you can experience for your week. I can't recommend it enough. It is just so sweet and fun and funny. And it just like, I loved it. I listened to it while walking Putty yesterday and like giggled and like several times in my head just went, oh, this is nice. So I really recommend listening to at least that one episode of Everyday Decisions. It's a podcast. It's Jo Firestone. We love her. So there's that one. Also, today, the day that we're recording, so it will have been a couple days before when people are listening to this, is my third year adoptiversary with Putty. So I just feel like I have to say that Putty has really been a wonderful creature to have around for the past 3 years, but especially right now. He also definitely is starting to have separation issues again, which will be fun to deal with when this is all over.
Great.
Yep. But he just is with us all the time, and I love him so much. And the other thing is that the other day I went to the farmer's market for our grocery shopping, and I bought flowers and put them on the table. And I was like, well, hot damn, flowers are nice. So I really enjoyed that. And it really it brought a brightness to every single day until they died yesterday. So those are my three chasers. That one episode of Joe Firestone's podcast, my dog, and our adoptiversary, and buying flowers for yourself.
Lovely.
Yeah. What about you? What's your chaser or multiple chasers?
Well, I feel like I use them all on my TV shows, so I'll keep this one simple and just say fucking coffee. I have been a little desperate without my afternoon run to the coffee shop. My coffee habits are out of control because I usually drink an entire pot of coffee in the morning and then have an afternoon run to Starbucks where I would usually get another venti coffee. Probably not great for my overall well-being. So I'm definitely experiencing withdrawal, but I love just like the ritual of making coffee in the morning, even though I'm basically just filling up a pot of water and putting grounds into a cone.
When you put it like that.
You know, but it's like nothing, truly nothing brings me more joy than that first warm, invigorating, stomach-churning, diarrhea-causing sip of coffee in the morning. And then I've been trying to replace the afternoon run to Starbucks with just making a just individual cup in the afternoon. But that is the one kind of regular thing that still feels kind of, I still do that every morning, despite the state of the world.
Beautiful.
Also, just want to say shout out to all the nurses, healthcare professionals, essential workers, all of the people who are risking their lives every single day, going out into the world, making people healthy, giving people the groceries that they need, stocking the shelves, dealing with everybody else's shit. I'm sure it cannot be easy. Everybody is fucking heroes. Every day at 7 p.m., everybody in New York has been like going out and clapping. At first, I would like really wanted to be cynical about it and be like, this is so stupid. They're like going and fighting in hospitals, and you're like standing at your window with the tambourine. What are you doing? But there is something I think kind of beautiful about every day. It catches me by surprise every time.
Mostly because I don't know what time it is.
Yeah, I'm like, oh, it's time for me to get dinner. But yeah, it is sort of like there is something beautiful about everybody taking that moment to say thank you to everybody who is literally putting their lives on the line to like keep shit going. So yeah.
I'm sure that there are unhappy hour listeners who are nurses and doctors and people like that. So I don't know if you have time to listen or anything like that, but if you are, specifically to you listeners, really, thank you.
Well, that's it for this week's episode. Thank you for listening to Unhappy Hour. You can head to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, wherever you get podcasts, hit that subscribe button, and then rate us and review us, but only if it's nice. I don't want to hear your shit. Unhappy Hour is a production of Pineapple Street Studios. It's produced by Barry Finkel, Melissa Slaughter, and me, Matt Belisai. Special thanks to Jenna Weiss-Berman and Max Linsky. Our music is by Hansdale Sue. You can bother Barry at Finkelberry Pie. You can worship me at Matt Belisai. And you can follow Unhappy Hour Pod on Twitter for all the latest podcast buzz. And that's it. That's everything. Thank you for listening. See you next week. Bye-bye. My muffin top is all that whole grain, low fat. I know you want a
piece of that, but I'm just here to dance.
Anyway. I feel like I come to this realization like once a year, and it shocks me every time that garbanzo beans and chickpeas are the same thing. The best part was I tweeted that and then someone responded and was like, you're going to go crazy when you hear about cilantro and coriander. And I was like, are you fucking kidding me?
Wait,
I literally went to the grocery store and went crazy looking for coriander and I could not find it anywhere. And then I looked that shit up and it fucking coriander and cilantro are the same ass thing.
What? I had no idea.
It was worth it to tweet about garbanzo beans solely to learn that.